do it, or five of them, or whatever number you deem fit to deal with an Otterlanian lord. She blinked again, slowly, and didn't give him any warning as she strode off at a clip, not bothering to wait to see if he followed or how fast he did. The columns and halls and gardens of the palace passed in a blur. Irene was so intent on reaching his rooms that she barely noticed someone had called her name. It wasn't until it was repeated a second time that she recognized it and cringed. By the time she turned, Caution, clad in armor and sweating enough to reveal he'd likely been exercising with the palace guards, had reached her side.
"I've been looking for you," he said,
his brown eyes immediately going to her chest. No, to the stain still on her dress. Caution's brows lifted.
"If you want to send that to the laundry, I'm sure Hassar can lend you some clothes while it is cleaned."
She'd forgotten she was still in it, the stained, wrinkled dress. Hadn't really felt like she was quite as much of a mess until now. Hadn't felt like a barnyard animal.
"Thank you for the offer, but I'll manage."
She took a step away, but Caution said,
"I heard about the assailant in the library. I arranged for additional guards to arrive at the Torre after sundown every night and stay until dawn. No one will get in without our notice."
It was generous, kind, as he had always been with her.
"Thank you."
His face remained grave as he swallowed. Irene braced herself for the words he'd voice, but Caution only said,
"Please be careful. I know you made your thoughts clear, but..."
"Caution."
"It doesn't change the fact that we are, or were, friends, Irene."
Irene made herself meet his eyes, made herself say,
"Lord Westfall mentioned your thoughts about Tumaloon."
For a moment, Caution glanced to the white banners streaming from the nearby window. She opened her mouth, perhaps to finally offer her condolences, to try to mend this thing that had fractured between them. But the prince said,
"Then you understand how dire this threat may be."
She nodded.
"I do, and I will be careful."
"Good,"
he said simply. His face shifted into an easy smile, and for a heartbeat, Irene wished she'd been able to feel anything beyond mere friendship, but it had never been that way with him, at least on her part.
"How is the healing of Lord Westfall? Have you made progress?"
"Some,"
she hedged. Insulting a prince, even one who was a former friend, by striding off was not wise. But the longer this conversation went on, she took a breath.
"I would like to stay and talk."
"Then stay."
That smile broadened. Handsome. Caution was truly a handsome man. If he had been anyone else, bore any other title. She shook her head, offering a tight smile.
"Lord Westfall is expecting me."
"I heard you rode with him this morning to the Torre. Did he not come back with you?"
She tried to keep the pleading expression off her face as she bobbed a curtsy.
"I have to go. Thank you again for the concern. And the guards, Prince."
The title hung between them, pealing like a struck bell. But Irene walked on, feeling Caution stare until she rounded a corner. She leaned against the wall, closing her eyes and exhaling deeply.
"Fool."
So many others would call her a fool, and yet...
"I almost feel bad for the man."
She opened her eyes to find Kaol, breathless and eyes still smoldering, wheeling himself around the corner.
"Of course," he went on. "I was far back enough that I couldn't hear you, but I certainly saw his face when he left."
"You don't know what you're talking about,"
Irene said blandly, and resumed walking toward his suite, slower.
"Don't check your pace on my account. You made impressive time."
She sliced him a glare.
"Did I do something to offend you today?"
His level stare revealed nothing, but his powerful arms kept working the wheels of his chair as he pushed himself along.
"Well?"
"Why do you shove away the prince? It seems like you two were once close." It was not the time or the place for this conversation.
That is none of your business.
Indulge me.
No.
He easily kept pace with her as she increased her own, all the way to the doors to his suite. Kaja was standing outside, and Irene gave her an inane order.
I need dried thyme, lemon, and garlic.
That might have very well been one of her mother's old recipes for fresh trout. The servant vanished with a bow, and Irene flung open the suite doors, holding one wide for him to pass.
Just so you know,
Irene hissed, as she shut the doors loudly behind him.
Your piss-poor attitude helps no one and nothing.
Kaol slammed his chair to a halt in the middle of the foyer, and she winced at what it must have done to his hands. He opened his mouth, but shut it. Right as the door to the other bedroom opened, and Nezrin emerged, hair wet and gleaming.
I was wondering where you went, she said to him, then gave Irene a nod of greeting. Early morning?
It took Irene a few heartbeats to reorder the room, the dynamic with Nezrin now in it. Irene was not the primary person. She was the help, the secondary, whatever. Kaol shook out his hands. Indeed, red marks marred them, but said to Nezrin, I went to the Torre to help the girls with a defense lesson.
Nezrin looked at the chair.
On horseback,
he said.
Nezrin's eyes now shot to Irene, bright and wide.
You... how?
A brace, Irene clarified. We were just about to resume our second attempt at healing.
And you could truly ride?
Irene felt Kaol's inward flinch, mostly because she flinched as well, at the disbelief.
We didn't try out anything more than a fast walk, but yes,
he said calmly, evenly, like he expected such questions from Nezrin, had grown used to it.
Maybe tomorrow I'll try a trot.
Though without leverage from his legs, the bouncing. Irene went through her mental archives on groin injuries, but she stayed quiet.
I'll go with you, Nezrin said, dark eyes lighting. I can show you the city, perhaps my uncle's home.
Kaol only replied,
I would like that,
before Nezrin pressed a kiss to his cheek.
I'm seeing them now for an hour or two, said Nezrin, then meeting with, you know. I'll be back this afternoon and resume my duties afterward.
Careful words. Irene didn't blame her. Not with the weapons stacked on the desk in Nezrin's bedroom, barely visible through the ajar door. Knives, swords, multiple bows and quivers. The captain had a small armory in her chamber. Kaol just grunted his approval, smiling slightly as Nezrin strode for the suite doors. The captain paused in the threshold, her grin broader than any Irene had seen before.
Hope. Full of hope.
Nezrin shut the door with a click. Alone in the silence again, still feeling very much the intruder, Irene crossed her arms.
Can I get you anything before we begin?
He just wheeled forward into his bedroom.
I'd prefer the sitting room, she said,
snatching her supply bag from where Kaja had set it on the foyer table, and likely rifled through it.
I'd prefer to be in bed while in agony,
he added over his broad shoulder. And hopefully you won't pass out on the floor this time. He easily moved himself from the chair onto the bed, then began unbuckling his jacket.
Tell me, Irene said, lingering in the doorway. Tell me what I did to upset you.
He peeled off his jacket.
You mean beyond displaying me like some broken doll in front of your acolytes and having them haul me off that horse like a limp fish?
She stiffened, pulling out the bit before dumping the supply bag on the floor.
Plenty of people help you here in the palace.
Not as many as you'd think.
The Torre is a place of learning, and people with your injury do not come often. Not when we usually have to go to them. I was showing the acolytes things that might help with untold numbers of patients in the future.
Yes, your prized, shattered horse. Look how well broken I am to you. how docile.
I did not mean that, and you know it.
He ripped off his shirt, nearly tearing it at the seams as he hauled it over his head. Was it some sort of punishment for serving the king, for being from Otterlin?
No. That he believed she could be that cruel, that unprofessional. It was precisely what I just said. I wanted to show them.
I didn't want you to show them.
Irene straightened.
Kaol panted through his gritted teeth. I didn't want you to parade me around, to let them handle me.
His chest heaved, the lungs beneath those muscles working like bellows.
Do you have any idea what it is like to go from that?
He waved a hand toward her, her body, her legs, her spine.
To this?
Irene had the sense of the ground sliding from beneath her. I know it is hard.
It is, but you made it harder today. You make me sit here mostly naked in this room, and yet I have never felt more bare than I did this morning.
He blinked, as if surprised he'd vocalized it, surprised he'd admitted to it. I'm sorry. It was all she could think to say.
His throat bobbed. Everything I thought, everything I had planned and wanted, it's gone. All I have left is my king, and this ridiculous slim scrap of hope that we survived this war, and I can find a way to make something of it.
Of what?
Of everything that crumbled in my hands. Everything.
His voice broke on the word. Her eyes stung. Shame or sorrow, Irene didn't know. And she didn't want to know. What it was, or what had happened to him. What made that pain gutter in his eyes. She knew. She knew he had to face it, had to talk about it, but... I'm sorry, she repeated. She added stiffly, I should have considered your feelings on the matter. He watched her for a long moment, then removed the belt from his waist, then took off his boots, socks. You can leave the pants on if you want. He removed them, then waited. Still brimming with anger. Still gazing at her with such resentment in his eyes. Irene swallowed. Once. Twice. Perhaps she should have scrounged up breakfast. But walking away, even for that? Irene had a feeling, one she couldn't quite place, that if she walked away from him, if he saw her back turn, healers and their patients required trust. A bond. If she turned her back on him and left, she didn't think that rift would be repaired. So she motioned him to move to the center of the bed and turn onto his stomach while she took up a seat on the edge. Irene hovered a hand over his spine, the muscled groove cutting deep through it. She hadn't considered his feelings, that he might have them, the things haunting him. His breathing was shallow, quick. Then he said,
Just to be clear, is your grudge against me, or Otterlin in general?
He stared at the distant wall, the entrance to the bathing room blocked by that carved wood screen. Irene held her hand steady, poised over his back, even as shame sluiced through her. No, she had not been in her best form these past few days. Not even close. That scar atop his spine was stark in the mid-morning light, the shadow of her hand upon his skin like some sister mark. The thing that waited within that scar. Her magic again recoiled at its proximity. She'd been too tired last night and too busy this morning to even think about facing it again. To contemplate what she might see, might battle, what he might endure too. But he'd been good to his word. Had instructed the girls despite her foolish, callous missteps. She supposed that she could only return the favor by doing as she'd promised as well. Irene took a steadying breath. There was no preparing for it, she knew. There was no bracing breath stealing enough to make this any less harrowing. For either of them. Irene silently offered Kaol the leather bit. He slid it through his teeth and clamped down lightly. She stared at him, his body braced for pain, face unreadable as he angled it toward the door. Irene said quietly, "Soldiers from Otterland burned my mother alive when I was 11. And before Kaol could answer, she laid her hand on the mark atop his spine. Chapter 16. There was only darkness and pain. He roared against it, distantly aware of the bit in his mouth, the rawness of his throat. Burned alive, burned alive, burned alive. The void showed him fire, a woman with golden brown hair and matching skin screaming in agony toward the heavens. It showed him a broken body on a bloody bed, a head rolling across a marble floor. You did this. You did this. You did this. It showed a woman with eyes of blue flame and hair of pure gold poised above him, dagger raised and angling to plunge into his heart. He wished. He sometimes wished that she hadn't been stopped. The scar on his face, from the nails she'd gouged into it when she first struck him. It was that hateful wish he thought of when he looked in the mirror. The body on the bed, and that cold room, and that scream. The collar on a tan throat, and a smile that did not belong to a beloved face. The heart he'd offered, and had been left to drop on the wooden planks of the river docks. An assassin who had sailed away, and a queen who had returned. A row of fine men hanging from the castle gates. All held within that slim scar. What he could not forgive or forget. The void showed it to him, again and again. It lashed his body with red-hot pronged whips and showed him those things over and over. It showed him his mother and his brother and his father. Everything he had left, what he'd failed, what he'd hated, and what he'd become. The lines between the last two had blurred. And he had tried. He had tried these weeks, these months. The void did not want to hear of that. Black fire raced down his blood, his veins, trying to drown out those thoughts. The burning rose left on a nightstand, the final embrace of his king. He had tried, tried to hope, and yet, women little more than children hauling him off a horse, poking and prodding at him. Pain struck, low and deep in his spine, and he couldn't breathe around it, couldn't out-scream it. White light flared, a flutter, far in the distance. Not the gold or red or blue of flame, but white like sunlight, clear and clean, a flicker through the dark, arcing like lightning riding through the night. And then the pain converged again. His father's eyes. His father's raging eyes when he announced he was leaving to join the guard. The fists. His mother's pleading. The anguish on her face the last time he'd seen her, as he'd ridden away from Aniel. The last time he'd seen his city. His home. His brother, small and cowering in their father's long shadow. A brother he had traded for another. A brother he had left behind. The darkness squeezed, crushing his bones to dust. It would kill him. It would kill him, this pain, this endless churning pit of nothing. Perhaps it would be a mercy. He wasn't entirely certain his presence beyond, made any sort of difference. Not enough to warrant trying, coming back at all. The darkness liked that. Seemed to thrive on that. Even as it tightened the vice around his bones, even as it boiled the blood in his veins and he bellowed and bellowed, white light slammed into him, blinding him, filling that void. The darkness shrieked, surging back, then rising like a tidal wave around him, only to bounce off a shell of that white light, wrapped around him, a rock against which the blackness broke, a light in the abyss. It was warm and quiet and kind. It did not balk at the dark. as if it had dwelled in such darkness for a long, long time, and understood how it worked.
Kaol opened his eyes. Irene's hand had slipped from his spine. She was already twisting away from him, lunging for his discarded shirt on the bedroom carpet. He saw the blood before she could hide it. Spitting out the bit, he gripped her wrist, his panting loud to his ears.
"You're hurt."
Irene wiped at her nose, her mouth, and her chin before she faced him. It didn't hide the stains down her chest, soaking into the neckline of her dress.
Kaol surged upright.
"Holy gods, Irene."
"I'm fine." The words were stuffy, warped with the blood still sliding from her nose.
Is that common?
He filled his lungs with air to call for someone to fetch another healer.
"Yes."
"Liar."
He heard the falsehood in her pause. Saw it in her refusal to meet his stare. Kaol opened his mouth, but she laid her hand on his arm, lowering the bloodied shirt.
"I'm fine, I just need
rest." She appeared anything but, with blood staining and crusting her chin and mouth. Irene pressed his shirt again to her nose as a new trickle slid out.
"At least," she said around the fabric and blood, "the stain from earlier now matches my dress."
A sorry attempt at humor, but he offered her a grim smile.
"I thought it was part of the design."
She gave him an exhausted but bemused glance.
"Give me 5 minutes, and I can go back in and..."
"Lie down. Right now."
He slid away a few feet on the mattress for emphasis. Irene surveyed the pillows, the bed large enough for four to sleep undisturbed beside one another. With a groan, she pressed the shirt to her face and slumped on the pillows, kicking off her slippers and curling her legs up. She tipped her head upward to stop the bleeding.
"What can I get you?"
he said, watching her stare blankly at the ceiling. She'd done this. Done this while helping him, likely because of whatever shitty mood he'd been in before. Irene only shook her head. In silence, he watched her press the shirt to her nose, watched blood bloom across it again and again, until it slowed at last, until it stopped. Her nose, mouth, and chin were ruddy with the remnants, her eyes fogged with either pain or exhaustion, perhaps both. So he found himself asking,
"How?"
She knew what he meant. Irene dabbed at the blood on her chest.
"I went in there, to the site of the scar, and it was the same as before. A wall that no strike of my magic could crumble. I think it showed me..."
Her fingers tightened on the shirt as she pressed it against the blood soaking her front.
"What?"
"Morath,"
she breathed, and he could have sworn even the birds singing faltered in the garden.
"It showed some memory, left behind in you. It showed me a great black fortress full of horrors, an army waiting in the mountains around it."
His blood iced over, as he realized whose memory it might belong to.
"Real, or was it some manipulation against you?"
The way his own memories had been wielded.
"I don't know,"
Irene admitted.
"But then I heard your screaming. Not out here, but in there."
She wiped at her nose again.
"And I realized that attacking that solid wall was... I think it was a distraction. A diversion. So I followed the sounds of your screaming to you.
To that place deep within him.
It was so focused upon ripping you apart that it did not see me coming."
She shivered.
"I don't know if it did anything, but... I couldn't stand it, to watch and listen. I startled it when I leaped in, but I don't know if it will be waiting the next time. If it will remember, there's a sentience to it. Not a living thing, but as if a memory were set free in the world."
Kaol nodded, and silence fell between them. She wiped at her nose again, his shirt now coated in blood, then set the fabric on the table beside the bed. For uncounted minutes,
Sunshine drifted across the floor, wind rustling the palms. Then Kaol said,
I'm sorry. About your mother.
Thinking through the timeline, it had likely occurred within a few months of Aelin's own terror and loss. So many of them. The children whom Otterlin had left such deep scars upon. If Otterlin had left them alive at all. She was everything good in the world, Irene said, curling onto her side to gaze at the garden windows beyond the foot of the bed. I made it out because she... Irene did not say the rest.
She did what any mother would do.
He finished for her. A nod. As healers, they had been some of the first victims, and continued to be executed long after magic had vanished. Otterlin had always ruthlessly hunted down the magically gifted healers. Their own townsfolk might have sold them out to Otterlin to make quick, cheap coin. Kaol swallowed. After a heartbeat, he said,
I watched the King of Otterlin butcher the woman Dorian loved in front of me, and I could do nothing to stop it, to save her. And when the king went to kill me for planning to overthrow him, Dorian stepped in. He took on his father and bought me time to run, and I ran. I ran because there was no one else to carry on the rebellion, to get word to the people who needed it. I let him take on his father and face the consequences, and I fled.
She watched him in silence. He is fine now, though.
I don't know. He is free, he is alive. But is he fine? He suffered. Greatly. In ways I can't begin to.
His throat tightened to the point of pain.
It should have been me. I had always planned for it to be me instead.
A tear slid over the bridge of her nose. Kaol scooped it up with his finger before it could slide to the other side. Irene held his stare for a long moment, her tears turning those eyes near radiant in the sun. He didn't know how long had passed, how long it had taken for her to even attempt to cleave that darkness, just a little. The door to the suite opened and closed, silently enough that he knew it was Kaja. But it drew Irene's stare away from him. Without it, there was a sense of cold, a quiet and a cold. Kaol clenched his fist, that tear seeping into his skin, to keep from turning her face toward his again, to read her eyes. But her head whipped upward so fast she nearly knocked his nose. The gold in Irene's eyes flared. Kaol, she breathed, and he thought it might have been the first time she'd called him such. But she looked down, dragging his stare with her, down his bare torso, his bare legs. To his toes slowly curling and uncurling, as if trying to remember the movement. Chapter 17 Nezrin's cousins were off at school when she knocked on the outer door to her aunt and uncle's lovely home in the Rooney Quarter. From the dusty street, all one could glimpse of the house beyond the high, thick walls, was the carved oak gate, reinforced with scrolling iron. But as it swung open under the hands of two guards who instantly beckoned her in, it revealed a shaded, broad courtyard of pale stone, flanked by pillars crawling with magenta bougainvillea, and a merry fountain inlaid with sea glass burbling in its center. The house was typical of Antica, and of the Balruni people from whom Nezrin and her family hailed. Long adjusted to desert climes, the entire building had been erected around sun and wind. Outer windows never placed near the heat of the southern exposure. The breeze catching narrow towers atop the building facing away from the sand-filled eastern wind to keep it from infiltrating the rooms it cooled. Her family was not fortunate enough to have a canal running beneath the house, as many of the wealthier in Antica did. But with the towering plants and carved wooden awnings, the shade kept the public lower levels around the courtyard cool enough during the day. Indeed, Nezrin inhaled deeply as she strode through the pretty courtyard, her aunt greeting her halfway across with,
Have you eaten yet?
She had, but Nezrin said, I saved myself for your table, Aunt. It was a common halha greeting amongst family. No one visited a house, especially in the Falik family, without eating, at least once. Her aunt, still a full-figured, beautiful woman whose four children had not slowed her down one bit, nodded in approval.
I told Brahim just this morning that our cook is better than the ones up at that palace.
A snort of amusement from a level up, from the wood-screened window overlooking the courtyard. Her uncle's study. One of the few common rooms on the usually private second level.
Careful, Zahida, or the Khagan may hear you and haul dear old cook to his palace.
Her aunt rolled her eyes at the figure just barely visible through the ornate wood screen, and looped her arm through Nezrin's.
Snoop, always eavesdropping on our conversations down here.
Her uncle chuckled but made no further comment. Nezrin grinned, letting her aunt lead her toward the spacious interior of the home, past the curvy-bodied statue of Inna, goddess of peaceful households and the Balruni people, her arms upraised in welcome and defense.
Perhaps the palace's inferior cook is why the royals are so skinny.
Her aunt huffed, patting her belly.
And no doubt why I've added so much padding these years.
She gave Nezrin a wink. Perhaps I should get rid of old cook then. Nezrin kissed her aunt's petal-soft cheek.
You are more beautiful now than you were when I was a child.
She meant it. Her aunt waved her off, but still beamed as they entered the dim, cool interiors of the house proper. Pillars upheld the high ceilings of the long hallway, the wood beams and furniture carved and fashioned after the lush flora and fauna of their distant, long-ago homeland. Her aunt led her deeper into the house than most guests would ever see, right to the second, smaller courtyard at the back, the one just for family. Most of it occupied by a long table and deep-seated chairs beneath the shade of an overhanging awning. At this hour, the sun was on the opposite side of the house, precisely why her aunt had chosen it. Her aunt guided her into a seat adjacent to the head of the table, the place of honor, and hurried off to inform the cook to bring out refreshments. In the silence, Nezrin listened to the wind, sighing through the jasmine crawling up the wall to the balcony hanging above. As serene a home as she'd ever seen, especially compared to the chaos of her family's house in Rifthold. An ache tightened her chest, and Nezrin rubbed at it. They were alive. They had gotten out. But it did not answer where they now were, or what they might face on that continent full of so many terrors.
Your father gets that same look when he's thinking too hard,
her uncle said from behind her. Nezrin twisted in her chair, smiling faintly as Brahim Falik entered the courtyard. Her uncle was shorter than her father, but slimmer, mostly thanks to not baking pastries for his livelihood. No, her uncle was still trim for a man of his age, his dark hair peppered with silver, both perhaps due to the merchant life that kept him so active. But Brahim's face, it was Sayyid Falik's face, her father's face. With less than 2 years separating them, some had thought them twins while growing up. And it was the sight of that kind, still handsome face that made Nezrin's throat tighten. One of the few traits I inherited from him, it seems. Indeed, where Nezrin was quiet and prone to contemplation, her father's booming laugh had been as constant in their house as her sister's merry singing and giggling. She felt her uncle studying her as he took the seat across from hers, leaving the head of the table for Zahida. Men and women governed the household together, their joint rule treated as law by their children. Nezrin had certainly fallen into line. Though her sister, she could still hear the screeching fights between her sister and father, as Delara had grown older and longed for independence.
For captain of the royal guard, her uncle mused, I am surprised you have the time to visit us so often.
Her aunt bustled in, bearing a tray of chilled mint tea and glasses.
Hush! Don't complain, Brahim, or she'll stop coming.
Nezrin smiled.
glancing between them as her aunt gave them each a glass of the tea, set the tray on the table between them, and claimed the seat at the head of the table. I thought to come by now while the children are at school. Another of the Khaganate's many wonderful decrees. Every child, no matter how poor or rich, had the right to attend school free of charge. As a result, nearly everyone in the empire was literate, far more than Nezrin could claim of Otterlin.
And here I was, her uncle said, smiling wryly, hoping you'd be back to sing more for us. Since you left the other day, the children have been yowling your songs like alley cats. I haven't the heart to tell them that their voices are not quite up to the same standard as their esteemed cousins.
Nezrin chuckled, even as her face heated. She sang for very few, only her family. She'd never sung for Kaol or the others, or even mentioned that her voice was better than good. It wasn't something that could easily be brought up in conversation, and the gods knew that the last several months had not been conducive to singing. But she found herself singing to her cousins the other night, one of the songs her father had taught her, a lullaby of Antica. By the end of it, her aunt and uncle had been gathered round, her aunt dabbing at her eyes and, well, now there was no going back with it, was there? She'd likely be teased about it until she never opened her mouth again. But if only she had come here just for singing. She sighed a bit, steeling herself. In the silence, her aunt and uncle exchanged looks. Her aunt asked quietly, "What is it?" Nezrin sipped from her tea, considering her words. Her aunt and uncle, at least, gave her the gift of waiting for her to speak. Her sister would have been shaking her shoulders by now, demanding an answer. There was an attack at the Torre the other night. A young healer was killed by an intruder. The murderer has not yet been found. No matter how she and Sartak had combed through the few sewers and canals beneath Antica last night, they had not found a single path toward the Torre, nor any sign of a Volg's nest. All they'd discovered were typical awful city smells and rats scurrying underfoot. Her uncle swore, earning a look from her aunt. But even her aunt rubbed at her chest before asking, "We'd heard the rumors, but you have now come to warn us?" Nezrin nodded. "The attack lines up with the techniques of enemies in Otterlin. If they are here, in this city, I fear it may be in connection to my arrival." She had not dared tell her aunt and uncle too much. Not for lack of trust, but for fear of who might be listening. So they did not know of the Volg, or Erewhon, or the Keys. They knew of her quest to raise an army, for that was no secret. But she did not risk telling them of Sartak, that he and his Rukin might be the path toward winning support from the Khagan, that his people might know something about the Volg that even they had not discovered in dealing with them. She did not even risk telling them she'd been on the Prince's Rook. Not that they'd really believe it. Well off as her family might be, there was wealth, and then there was royalty. Her uncle said, "Will they target our family to get to you?" Nezrin swallowed. "I don't believe so, but I would put nothing past them. It is still unknown if this attack was in relation to my arrival, or if we are jumping to conclusions. But on the chance that it is true, I came to warn you to hire more guards if you can." She looked between them, laying her hands palm up on the table. "I am sorry to have brought this to your household." Another glance between her aunt and uncle, then each took her by the hand. "There is nothing to be sorry for," her aunt said, just as her uncle added,
"Getting to see you so unexpectedly has been a blessing beyond measure."
Her throat closed up. This
was what Erewhon was poised to destroy. She'd find a way to raise that army, either to rescue her family from war or keep it from reaching these shores.
Her aunt declared, "We will hire more guards, have an escort for the children to and from school." A nod to her husband,
and anywhere we go in this city. Nezrin's uncle added,
And what of you?
Traipsing about the city on your own? Nezrin waved a hand, though their concern warmed her. She refrained from telling them she'd hunted Vog in Rifthold sewers for weeks, that she'd been stalking them through Antica's sewers last night. And most certainly refrained from telling them just how involved she'd been in the Glass Castle's demise. She had no wish to see her uncle keel over in his chair, or see her aunt's thick, beautiful hair go white.
I can handle myself.
Her aunt and uncle did not look so convinced, but they nodded all the same. Justice Cook emerged, smiling broadly at Nezrin, little dishes of chilled salads between her withered hands. For long moments, Nezrin ate everything her aunt and uncle piled onto her plate, which was indeed as good as any food at the palace. By the time she was stuffed to the point of exploding, by the time she drained her tea to its dregs, her aunt said slyly to her, I had hoped you'd be bringing a guest, you know. Nezrin snorted, brushing the hair from her face.
Lord Westfall is quite busy, aunt.
But if Irene had gotten him onto a horse this morning, perhaps she'd indeed get him here tomorrow. Introduce him to her family, to the four children who filled this house with chaos and joy. Her aunt sipped daintily from her tea.
Oh, I didn't mean him.
A wry grin between Zahida and Brahim.
I meant Prince Sartak.
Nezrin was glad she'd finished her tea.
What of him?
That sly smile didn't fade.
Rumor claims someone,
a pointed look at Nezrin, was spotted riding with the prince at dawn yesterday, atop his rook. Nezrin reined in her wince.
I was.
She prayed no one had seen her with him last night, that word would not reach the Volg agent's ears they were being hunted. Her uncle chuckled.
And you plan to tell us when?
The children were beside themselves with excitement that their beloved cousin had ridden on Kadara herself.
I did not want to brag. A pathetic excuse.
Hmm, was all her uncle replied, mischief dancing in his gaze. But Nezrin's aunt gave her a knowing look, steel in her brown eyes, as if she too did not forget for one moment the family who remained in Otterlin, and perhaps now tried to flee to these shores. Her aunt simply said,
The rooks will not fear wyverns.
Chapter 18 Irene's heart thundered, as she knelt beside Kaol on the bed and watched his toes shift.
Can you feel that?
Kaol was still staring, as if he didn't quite believe it. The word stalled in his throat.
Can you control the movement?
He seemed to concentrate. Then his toes stopped.
Good,
she said, sitting upright to watch more closely.
Now move them.
He again appeared to concentrate and concentrate.
And then,
two toes curled, then three on the other foot. Irene smiled, broadly, widely, remained smiling as she turned her head toward him.
He only stared at her.
Her smile, a sort of focused intensity falling across his features, that made her go a bit still.
How?
He asked.
Maybe when I got to you. When my magic blasted back darkness a little.
It had been terrible. To find him inside all that dark. The void, the cold, the shrieking pain and horror. She had refused to acknowledge what it tried to show her at that wall. Again and again. That terrible fortress. The fate that awaited her when she returned. She had refused to acknowledge it as she had struck the wall. Her magic begging her to stop, to pull away. Until she'd heard him, far off and deeper within. She'd blindly lunged, a spear throw toward that sound. And there he'd been, or whatever it was of him. As if this was the core of the tether between man and injury, not the wall against the nerves far, far above. She'd wrapped herself around it,
hugging tight even as the darkness pounded in again and again. And in answer, she'd sent her magic slashing into it, a scythe of light into the dark. A torch that burned just a fraction. Just enough, it seemed. "This is good," Irene declared, perhaps uselessly. "This is wonderful." Kaol was still staring at her as he said,
"It is."
She became aware of the blood on her, the state of her. "Let's start with this," she said. "Do a few exercises before we stop for the day." What she had admitted about her mother. She had only told Hafiza upon entering the Torre. No one else. She had told no one else, not since she'd staggered onto her mother's cousin's farm and begged for sanctuary and shelter. She wondered how long his own story had been locked in his chest. "Let me order food first," Irene decided. She glanced toward the wood screen shielding the bathing room from sight, then down at her blood-crusted chest and dress. "While we wait, I might beg to use your bath and borrow a set of your clothes." Kaol was still watching her with that focused, calm face. A different one from any she'd seen on him before. As if in shaving off some of that darkness, it had revealed this facet beneath. This man she had not yet met. She wasn't sure what to do with it. With him?
"Take whatever you want,"
Kaol told her. His voice low. Rough. Irene was lightheaded when she crawled off the bed, taking his ruined shirt with her, and hurried for the bathing chamber. From the blood loss, she told herself, even as she smiled throughout her bath.
"I can't help but feel neglected, you know,"
Hasar drawled as she pored over maps Irene didn't dare inquire about. From across the princess's lavish receiving room, she couldn't view them properly, and could only watch as Hasar moved several ivory figurines here and there, her dark brows scrunched in concentration. "Renya, of course," Hasar went on, sliding a figure 2 inches to the right and frowning, "says I should not expect so much of your time. But perhaps I've grown spoiled these 2 years." Irene sipped her mint tea, and did not comment one way or the other. Hasar had summoned her here upon learning that Irene had been healing Lord Westfall all day, sending a servant to fetch her to the princess's rooms, with the promise of some much-needed refreshments. And indeed, the carob cookies and tea had pushed back the tide of her exhaustion just a fraction. Her friendship with the princess had been purely accidental. In one of Irene's first on-site lessons, Hafiza had brought her to tend to the princess, who had returned from her seaside palace in the northeast to be treated for an unrelenting stomach pain. They were both of similar age, and during the hours that Hafiza went about removing a truly horrific tapeworm from the princess's intestines, Hasar had ordered Irene to talk. So Irene had, rambling about her lessons, occasionally mentioning the more disgusting moments of her year working at the White Pig. The princess particularly enjoyed her tales of the rather messier bar fights. Her favorite story to hear, which she'd ordered Irene to narrate thrice during the days Hafiza had extracted the magically slaughtered tapeworm through her mouth, one orifice or the other, the healer on high had told the princess, was of the young stranger who had saved Irene's life, taught her to defend herself, and left her a small fortune in gold and jewels. Irene had deemed it idle talk, not expecting the princess to remember her name once Hafiza had coaxed the last inches of the tapeworm from her body. But 2 days later, she'd been called to the princess's rooms, where Hasar was busy stuffing her face with all manner of delicacies to make up for the weight she'd lost. Too thin, she'd told Irene by way of greeting. She needed a fatter ass for her lover to grip at night. Irene had burst out laughing, the first bit of true laughter she'd had in a long, long time. Hasar had only smirked, offered Irene some smoked fish from the river-rich lowlands, and that had been that. Perhaps not a friendship of equals, but Hasar seemed to enjoy her company, and Irene was in no position to deny her. so the princess made a point to summon Irene whenever she was in Antica, and had eventually brought Renya to the palace, both to meet her father and to meet Irene. Renya, if Irene was being honest, was far preferable to the demanding and sharp-tongued princess. But Hisar was prone to jealousy and territorialism, and often made sure Renya was kept well away from the court and would-be contenders for her affections. Not that Renya had ever given cause for such a thing. No, the woman, older than Irene by a month, only had eyes for the princess, loved her with unflinching devotion. Hisar called her a lady, had granted Renya lands within her own territory. Yet Irene had heard some of the other healers whisper that when Renya had first entered Hisar's orbit, Hafiza had been discreetly asked to heal her of unpleasantries from her former life. Former profession, apparently. Irene had never asked Hisar for the details, but given how loyal Renya was to the princess, she often wondered if the reason why Hisar so loved to hear Irene's own story of her mysterious savior was because she, too, had once seen a woman suffering and reached out to help, and then to hold her. "You're smiling more today, too," Hisar said, setting down her glass pen. "Despite those hideous clothes." "Mine were sacrificed to the cause of healing Lord Westfall," Irene said, rubbing at the dull throbbing in her temple that even the tea and carob cookies couldn't chase away. "He was kind enough to lend me some of his own." Hisar smirked. "Some might see you and assume you lost your clothes for a far more pleasurable reason." Irene's face heated. "I'd hope they'd remember that I am a professional healer at the Torre. It'd make it even more valuable gossip. I'd think they'd have better things to do than whisper about a nobody healer." "You are Hafiza's unofficial heir. That makes you slightly interesting." Irene wasn't insulted by the frank words. She didn't explain to Hisar that she'd likely be leaving and Hafiza would have to find someone else. She doubted the princess would approve and wasn't entirely certain that Hisar would let her leave. She'd been worried about caution for so long, yet Hisar... "Well, regardless, I have no designs on Lord Westfall." "You should. He's divertingly handsome. Even I'm tempted."
"Really?"
Hisar laughed. "Not at all. But I could see why you might be.
He and Captain Philique are involved."
"And if they weren't?" Irene took a long sip from her tea.
"He is my patient, and I am his healer. There are plenty of other handsome men."
"Like Kashin." Irene frowned at the princess over the black and gold rim of her teacup.
"You keep pushing your brother on me. Are you encouraging him?"
Hisar put a hand on her chest, her manicured nails gleaming in the late afternoon sun.
"Kashin had no trouble with women until you came along. You two were once such close friends. Why shouldn't I wish that my dear friend and brother form a deeper attachment?" "Because if you are appointed Kagan, you might kill us if he doesn't submit."
"Him? Possibly, if he doesn't bow.
And if you prove to not be carrying his offspring, I might let you take the cleansing once my own line is established, and keep your wealth."
Such bald, casual words. Of such horrible methods meant to keep this wondrous, sweeping empire from fracturing. She wished Kashin were here to listen, to understand. Irene asked,
"And what would you do for producing offspring?"
With Renya as the possible future Grand Empress, Hisar would need to find some way to produce a blood heir. Hisar began pushing her fingers around the map again.
"I have already told my father, and it is no concern of yours."
Right. For if she had selected some male to do the job? Dangerous knowledge. Her siblings might very well try to destroy someone whom Hisar and Renya trusted enough to assist in that way. Or would pay handsomely to know that Hisar and Renya were even considering offspring at this point. But Hisar then said,
"I heard that killer in the library hunted you.
unforgiving will filled her face. Why did you not come to me first?
Before Irene could answer, Hasar mercifully went on.
They said it was some strange death, not a typical one at all.
Irene tried and failed to block out the memory of the gaunt, leathery face.
It was.
Hasar sipped her tea.
I don't care if the attack was a deliberate move on your life or whether it was just piss-poor coincidence.
She set down her cup with delicate precision.
When I find whoever it is, I'll behead them myself.
The princess tapped a hand on the sheathed blade discarded along the edge of her oak desk. Irene didn't doubt her, but she said,
I've been told the danger is considerable.
I do not take lightly to my friends being hunted like beasts.
Not the voice of a princess, but a warrior queen.
And I do not take lightly to Torre healers being killed and terrorized.
Hasar was many things, but she was loyal. To her core. To the few, few people whom she favored. It had always warmed something in Irene. To have someone who actually meant what they said. Hasar would behead the killer if they were unfortunate enough to encounter her. She would ask no questions either.
Irene considered all she knew about the potential murderer, and struggled to refrain from telling the princess that beheading was, in fact, the proper way to deal with a Vogue demon. Unless you were facing the remnants of it within someone. In which case?
As awful, as exhausting as today's session with Lord Westfall had been, she'd already catalogued and tucked away the small scraps of information she'd gleaned. Not just for his healing, but if she should ever face it again, on those battlefields. Even if the prospect of seeing those Vogue demons in the flesh. Taking a steadying drink of her tea, Irene asked,
Are you not concerned that perhaps it is no coincidence war is upon the northern continent, and now we have enemies in our midst?
She didn't dare mention Tumaloon's death.
Perhaps Lord Westfall and Captain Philique brought in their own spies to track you. That is not possible. Are you so certain?
They are desperate. And desperation breeds people who are willing to do anything to get what they need.
And what would they need from me, beyond what I am already giving them?
Hasar beckoned Irene over with a flick of her fingers. Irene set down her teacup and strode across the deep blue carpet to the desk before the windows. Hasar's rooms commanded a view of the teal bay, the ships and the gulls, and the glittering sprawl of the narrow sea beyond. Hasar gestured to the map in front of her.
What do you see here?
Irene's throat tightened as she recognized the landmass. The northern continent. Her own home.
And all the figures on it, in red and green and black, are those armies.
This is Duke Parrington's force, Hasar said, pointing to the line of black figures stretching like a wall across the middle of the continent.
Other clusters lay to the south. And to the north, one small green cluster, and a lone red figure just beyond the shores of Rifthold.
What are the others?
Hasar said.
There is a small army in Terrasen.
She snickered at the green figures clustered around Orinth.
And in Otterlan?
Hasar picked up the red figurine, twirling it between two figures.
No army to speak of. Dorian Havilyard remains unaccounted for. Will he flee north or south? Or perhaps cut inland, though there is certainly nothing beyond the mountains save for half-feral tribes.
What is that figure?
Irene asked, noting the gold pawn Hasar had set off the map entirely. Hasar picked it up, too.
It is Aelin Galathinius, also unaccounted for.
She is not in Terrasen? With her army?
No.
Hasar patted the documents she'd been referencing as she'd adjusted her own maps. Reports, Irene realized.
The latest news indicates the Queen of Terrasen is nowhere to be found in her own kingdom. Or in any other.
A slight smile.
Perhaps you should ask your lord that.
I doubt he'll tell me.
She refrained from saying he wasn't her lord.
Then perhaps you should make him.
Irene carefully asked,